on February 13th, 2025.
I, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
I, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was sworn in as the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office.
The duties of the office.
That's Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch swearing him in there.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Secretary.
Beginning what has been a seismic year in public health policy with tectonic shifts in how policy is made and measured, in how research studies are selected and funded, in the information that the federal government pursues and to which we have access, and the very words scientists are allowed to use. I can't tell you what the aftershocks will feel like because we're still in the earthquake. What does it feel like to be in the epicenter? Dr. Peter Hotez knows. He talked to me at the beginning of 2025 about what may be ahead, and he joined me again at the end of the year to reassess the still rattling landscape. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Buddy Petri.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
We started 2025 with Dr. Peter Hotez because he is one of the nation's top experts in infectious diseases and vaccines in public health. He is a professor of pediatrics and molecular virology at Baylor College of Medicine and the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine and co-director of the Texas Children's Hospital Center for Vaccine Development. I wanted to reach back out to him now because of those credentials, but also because of Rachel, his daughter. She is autistic and the inspiration for his 2018 book, Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism. So in April, when the newly installed Secretary of Health and Human Services began to talk about autism using some very dark imagery.
These are kids who will never pay taxes, they'll never hold a job, they'll never play baseball, they'll never write a poem, they'll never go out on a date. Many of them will never use a toilet unassisted.
I thought about Dr. Hotez and Rachel.
Well, he actually did two things in April. And so the first thing he did was, it was really a stunt, right? He says he's going to find the cause of autism, right? And then he wants to find the cure for autism. And it's nonsense, right? We know from now more than a decade or more of autism research that, first of all, it's a spectrum, and there are more than 100 genes involved in autism that have been well reported at Harvard Medical School and here at Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital. And it's this complex interplay between the genes and some environmental exposures in pregnancy, which, by the way, I went through with him, and he was the one who had no interest in it. So, you know, one of the best known ones is Depakote, valproic acid, an anti-seizure medication. It's also used as a mood stabilizer. If you're pregnant and not aware of it, you know, the OBs don't let you use it during pregnancy, which is great. It interacts with autism genes to cause an autism phenotype.
So the autism phenotype is what you see, right? The traits and characteristics of a person with autism when those genes sort of activate. The word phenotype is often used alongside the word genotype, which refers to the genetic variations that might predispose someone to developing the autism phenotype when those variations interact with the environment. And none of this is simple.
You know, I don't like to compare autism to something like cancer because it rightly gets the neurodiversity people upset. But just to make this point, you know, to say you're going to find the cause of autism is like saying you're going to find the cause of cancer, right? Everybody knows this is complex and there's not one cause. It's all this. There's dozens of different types of cancer. There are dozens or hundreds of different types of autism, each linked to different genes and complex environmental interactions. So again, it's this baby talk that he uses, this very simplistic way of thinking about it. So that was problem one. Second was, you're right, the way he frames autism in these very dark sort of eugenics type terms, right? That, you know, they can't use the toilet, they don't contribute to society, they don't earn a paycheck, they don't pay taxes. Well, my daughter Rachel, she has friends, she works at Goodwill where she loves it, and she walks from our home every morning and walks through the neighborhood, interacts with people in the neighborhood, has friends at work, goes to the movies, and she's got a really interesting life. And, you know, and for, you know, Mr. Kennedy to negate that. And then, you know, he talked about creating these very dark registries, like, where, you know, hell no, I'm not going to put my daughter on one of Bobby Kennedy's registries.
And because Kennedy made this promise, right, that we're going to have a cause by September, he and President Trump called a news conference in September, which kind of had everyone on the edge of their seats, because what were they even going to say, right?
We knew they weren't going to deliver on their so-called cause of autism. And they tried to, right? They came up with this ridiculous idea of Tylenol, when the evidence for it is overwhelmingly in favor that it's not Tylenol. There are, as I mentioned, something like Depakote or valproic acid, there are true environmental triggers that can interact with autism genes, but it's not Tylenol, right, or acetaminophen. It was a large paper coming out of the Karolinska Institute in 2024, clearly showing no link between Tylenol and autism. So you would kind of take that off the list. Then what they were quoting or referring to, there was a type of analysis. It's like what some people call a systematic review or navigational review, where you look at all the studies that have looked at, in this case, Tylenol. And usually those kinds of studies are more to generate hypotheses rather than to prove it. So what do I mean by that? So in this case, the studies that they were quoting is the smoking gun. What did it really show? It really showed, well, some studies show that there may be a link, but other studies showed there doesn't seem to be a link. And other studies showed actually that Tylenol was protective, you know, in preventing autism. And that's what they went on. And how they thought they could kind of get away with that when something is so easy, you know, easily verifiable that it's not the case. And then I think a few days later, they walked it back, and the head of the agencies, I think it was Bhattacharya with NIH or McCary, with, you know, wrote an op-ed sort of trying to walk it back, to their credit. But, you know, the damage was sort of out there because it was so widely covered.
I read the paper that they cited, and it clearly states that it has not established causation. It did not prove, nor did it claim to prove, that Tylenol use during pregnancy causes autism.
I think what happened was Kennedy went out there in April and made this promise that he could never deliver on, and he couldn't. And rather than doing what the two of us would do, which is to say, yeah, maybe That was a bit over the top, and, you know, I'm really sorry about that. Here's what I think is going on, which the American people understand that they, you know, the American people are very forgiving for authenticity, right? And that's the way you handle something if you make a mistake. He instead doubles down and tries to go from telling a lie to a bigger lie, and that's what he's done.
And then the president at that news conference went on to say that a type of vitamin B9 might work as a treatment for autism.
So again, the baby talk, because he thinks in very simple terms. He can't really understand the science or read the science. So then he comes up with leucovorin. And there is a subset of people with ASD that have defects in certain cell surface receptors for taking things up. That's one of the among the autism genes, and one of them is the receptor for folate. So there is probably a small subset of kids who do benefit from it, but it has to be explained. You have to contextualize it. You have to say, okay, you know, these are the genes involved in autism. There is a subset, and that subset, you know, might benefit from leucovorin. There's some preliminary studies to say that's the case. And instead, this is his simplistic way of thinking, again, non-scientific way of thinking. And the problem is he doesn't defer to the scientist. He, you know, he takes it on himself, and he's wrong. And it creates this whole disinformation campaign as a result.
And that pulls resources away from other research.
And here's the reason why we need to care is there are real things we need to know. It would be helpful if we can identify some of the environmental triggers that happen during pregnancy. We know at least one. There's probably others. And so, yes, that is worth looking into. And yes, families really do need help with not only kids with autism, but, you know, now that Rachel's an adult, no one is really addressing all the adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I mean, you know, we're kind of keeping it together now for Rachel, you know, because it's sort of metastable. She's, you know, walks to work, walks to Goodwill. She has a good life.
But what does the future look like for families like Hotez's?
Or we get older, our health starts to fail, or if we have cognitive decline, or if, you know, if we're gone, there's no roadmap for what you do with adults with intellectual and developmental disability. That's what we need. That's what we need the White House to look into. That's what we need the Congress to look into. Not pseudoscience, phony baloney of making up stories. That doesn't help anybody.
Autism would not be Kennedy's only target in 2025. He also had his eyes on the influential committee of experts who make recommendations on vaccines.
So ACIP is a discredited committee. I mean, anyone who has any interest in science would have no business even bothering to tune in and listen to them.
More on that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio's Mays Cancer Center, South Texas NCI-designated cancer center, providing cancer care for patients, advancing research, and educating the next generation of leaders. Mays Cancer Center is working to end cancer in South Texas and beyond. Learn more at mayscancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Buddy Petri. In 2025, there's been all kinds of fascinating news about the potential benefits of vaccines beyond just fighting off specific infectious diseases. Flu shots seem to reduce the risk of heart attack in older people, and the measles vaccine seems to reduce a child's risk of other types of infections. And there's a mounting body of research showing that the shingles vaccine might also reduce a person's risk of developing dementia.
Yeah, there are all these secondary effects that we're only learning about. I think with the COVID vaccines, we're finding it out now because there's almost a billion doses of mRNA vaccines were given to the American people. And we are seeing real benefits, including the fact that we know mRNA COVID vaccines saved 3.2 million American lives. So instead of 1.2 million Americans dying from the pandemic, overwhelmingly those who didn't get vaccinated, you know, it would have been 4.4 million were it not for vaccinations. And now we have additional evidence showing there's a protective effect of COVID vaccinations on your heart health, because remember, this virus is, you know, we call it a respiratory virus in the way we thought about the original SARS back in 2002, SARS-1, but it's really a thromboembolic virus, right? Causes heart attacks and strokes, and vaccinations protect that. And we need to get a better job getting that word out.
So vaccine news has been pretty good this year. And yet, CNN reported a few weeks ago that the FDA was going to put a black box warning on the COVID vaccine. Then the FDA chief came out and said, no, that wasn't true. And it has not happened, but a lot has happened in the world of vaccines in 2025. In June, Secretary Kennedy fired all 17 vetted vaccine experts on the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP. He then replaced them with a handpicked board, and it has made controversial changes to the CDC's recommendations. One change that got a lot of attention was on hepatitis B. Since the early 90s, the CDC has recommended that all newborns get a dose of the hepatitis B vaccine at birth. ACIP in December voted 8-3 to withdraw that recommendation. Dr. Peter Hotez says that decision had nothing to do with science.
They fail to understand the epidemiology of hepatitis, thinking it's all due to vertical transmission in mothers. It's not. It's, you know, babies acquire it at home when they go home from the nursery through household contacts. That's been well established, also in daycare, and it's worked really well. We've eliminated liver cancer or close to it from hepatitis B. Why go after something when it's not broken and then try to do something that's not grounded in science? And so ACIP is a discredited committee. I mean, anyone who has any interest in science, you would have no business even bothering to tune in and listen to them. And so when, you know, when I got asked to speak to them, I said, what's the point? They're just a bunch of pseudoscience ideologues, and they have no interest in science, and that's their track record.
And it's an unfortunate time to pull back on vaccine science, from my view as a bioscience journalist, because there's just so much exciting stuff going on, even beyond Shingrix and dementia, which would be enough, right? But Kennedy's HHS has slashed $500 million for mRNA vaccine research, just as mRNA technology has opened up a whole world of potential treatments for a host of diseases that cause incredible suffering.
Yeah, that's correct. We know, for instance, it's not only infectious diseases that mRNA could be used for. Here at Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital, we're working with our cancer center. We're not cancer biologists, but we're collaborating with the people who are, to now we've got the mRNA technology working really well. And now we're looking at making a triple negative breast cancer therapeutic, you know, a therapeutic vaccine or immunotherapy. That looks really exciting. And recently, Sloan Kettering in New York has reported success of mRNA for pancreatic cancer. And there's been reports of success for lung cancer. So this is not a time to be tearing down our whole innovation infrastructure for ideological reasons, because not only is it for pandemic threats, but cancer and allied diseases, but also now autoimmune diseases. It's really exciting, you know, where we're at right now. We're at a time where, you know, the technology is such, we can make a vaccine for almost any condition, you know, in a few years. But we're going to be way behind if we keep tearing it all down just for Mr. Kennedy's sake to benefit the very corrupt health and wellness and influencer industry.
And Dr. Hotez, you've written about the impact of all of this on biosecurity, which I don't think a lot of people have thought about. So talk to me a little bit more about that.
Well, what he's done is he's canceled two contracts through BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Authority, for mRNA vaccines that were going to produce next generation influenza vaccines, but also vaccines to be ready for other pandemic threats. Remember, we've already had two major SARS-like coronavirus, SARS-1 and SARS-2, and which was COVID-19, the SARS-2, and now we're going to have likely a third one coming up, and then we've got all the zoonotic influenza, so we're vulnerable there. We're vulnerable because of vector-borne illness, insect-transmitted viruses like dengue or chikungunya. We're also seeing a rise in tick-borne illnesses, so we won't have vaccines for those. And then we have risk because of our enemies. It's been reported, you know, North Korea, Iran, Russia are building up their bioweapons capability. And now we won't be able to make mRNA vaccines quickly for that as well. All for his system of maha pseudoscience.
So Kennedy has also instituted sweeping cuts in staff and funding at the FDA, CDC, and the National Institutes of Health. He also recently cut several grants to the American Academy of Pediatrics, a professional organization that has criticized Kennedy early and often. HHS under Kennedy has terminated or frozen thousands of NIH research grants, disrupting hundreds of studies and ongoing clinical trials. Hotez says in fewer than 10 months, Kennedy has destabilized the nation's entire research infrastructure.
The thing that worries me is what the impact is on young people looking at all of this. I mean, I feel sometimes they look at me like Moses in the desert. You know, why did you bring us here? And because it's not just the actual government cuts the funding. It's the fear that science is no longer valued in America and that, you know, they're holding up grants for ideological reasons or uncertain reasons. And, you know, the process was already not great. I mean, it's grants are so highly competitive, but now you add this uncertainty to it. I think a lot of young people are starting to kind of give up their careers in biomedical science. And of course, that happens. You're not going to know about it for another 4 or 5 years, right? You're not, it's going to be a delayed effect just because that's the length of training. So I worry, you know, in 5, 7 years, we're going to, you know, look around and realize that we've not trained any scientists and we've lost a generation of scientists. I mean, because what's happening is they're kind of waging psychological warfare on our young scientists by, you know, eventually in some cases even awarding the grant. But you've gone through this whole period of uncertainty knowing whether your grant won't get funded, in which case you have to start looking for a job. And that's very destabilizing. And I think they seem to be tone deaf to that.
And federal data collection systems have been dismantled. I recently tried to access a data set from the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System for a story on maternal mental health, and it just wasn't available anymore. Important information is disappearing.
On federal government websites, they're taking screenshots of it to save it. Health and Human Services also attacking the biomedical journals or trying to create their own parallel universe of other journals. It's all very dark. You know, they're just creating this whole alternative Maha universe of pseudoscience. And I have an article in the Baker Institute website also that, you know, basically says this is like a return to the early 20th century when Abraham Flexner in his review of the medical schools shut down all the quack medical schools like homeopathic medical schools and eclectic medical schools in favor of scientific medicine. Now Kennedy seems to be the revenge of that in bringing back all of the grifting under the guise of health and wellness.
But Dr. Hotez, there also seems to be a developing alternative to that alternative universe. The American Academy of Pediatrics has issued its own vaccine recommendations, and 7 Northeastern states created the Northeast Public Health Collaborative, and 4 Western states formed the West Coast Health Alliance.
We're trying to fill the gaps, right? So with the collapse of government science, what you're seeing is the states are seeing if they can rally and create something on their own, but it's imperfect, right? Because the states are not really set up for that, and it's not clear what the insurance companies do. It's not clear what the pharmacy chains do, and it can raise confusion, too. Do they listen to these coalitions of states or AAP, or do they listen to the federal government? And what about liability issues around for pediatricians? What happens if something goes wrong? Do they get a lawsuit filed against them because either they didn't follow the states or either they didn't follow what the federal government is recommending in their pseudoscience world? So it's just chaos.
Okay, well, what do you forecast for year 2? More chaos or will things settle a little?
I would imagine it's a continuum. As I say, they're very strategic. They are picking off vaccines one by one, first MMR, then trying to separate the components, which is not doable. Now DPT saying you got to get rid of the aluminum, now hepatitis B. And each time they do that, it erodes trust in vaccines and ensures that those diseases are coming back. And that's what's happened. Measles is back. Even though officially it still has elimination status, you know, basically it's back. Now, same with pertussis. And there's no end. You know what comes next? Polio, Haemophilus influenza, type B meningitis, meningococcal meningitis. I mean, every week it's a new shop of horrors from these guys.
All right, that's a lot. And those of us living out here in the world have to try to make sense of it all so we can, you know, make smart decisions. So how do we do that, Dr. Hotez, particularly parents?
Yeah, I think it's really important that you trust your pediatrician and have discussions with your pediatrician. If you're uncertain, they're well-trained in vaccinations, as well as your internist and obstetrician. And unfortunately, it's terrible to say, but we can no longer trust this U.S. Centers for Disease Control or their advisory committee. And I don't think we can trust the FDA or even the NIH much. So it's a complete collapse of the scientific enterprise in our U.S. government. I never thought I'd see that, but hopefully it's restored at some point. But we're entering a dark period, and so identifying people that you trust is going to be really important.
That relationship with a trusted pediatrician will really matter going forward, as Secretary Kennedy appears poised to dramatically change the recommended vaccine schedule in early 2026. He's expected to announce a schedule for children that mimics that of Denmark, a country of just 6 million people, to the nearly 350 million people in the U.S. Denmark's about the size of Wisconsin. It's also a country with universal health care, which means sick kids usually go to the doctor for treatment sooner than kids in the U.S. Danish parents don't have to do the kind of math about affordability that American parents often do, and that reduces the impact of illness on the larger population. Hotez also notes that Denmark doesn't require the meningococcal vaccine or the rotavirus vaccine and says, quote, "As a pediatrician who has admitted so many sick kids with those two illnesses, I could say with confidence and authority, that's a grave mistake." If Kennedy does order this change to the CDC's vaccine recommendations, courts could set it aside as arbitrary. And if they don't, states don't have to accept them. It will be interesting to see how the nation reacts to this announcement if Kennedy follows through, and how organizations like the AAP and those regional coalitions of states meet this moment, as well as the impact that Kennedy's approach to public health policy might have on the 2026 midterm elections. Stay tuned to Petri Dish. We will keep you informed along the way. And thank you, Dr. Peter Hotez. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rizzotti, TPR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. I wrote the show, and Jacob composed all the music, created the sound design, and edited the script. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.